Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I almost thought about doing that sing-song-ish type, but I just was like, I'm probably going to mess it up. I didn't even.
Yeah, that's probably a wise choice.
You know what? I don't need your input. By the way, our co-host for the evening is Spencer sing-song-ish Williams.
Real original.
I don't even think that's a word.
It's not. Great job.
Thank you. We got a great show in store for you tonight, and we are not alone. We have with us tonight the illustrious, the famed, the now too big for his britches and doesn't produce our show anymore, so he leaves it to me to do it, Mr. Corey Vincent.
What is up, my pizzas?
That is right. Corey is coming fresh from Video Game Bang, where they have been doing a lot of great stuff, actually, locally, with our state fair and just great things all together. So how are things going, man?
Oh, I've been busy.
Yeah,
real busy. I've been all over the countryside touring for my job and then trying to maintain a podcast and then, you know, whatever you guys do in my house on Tuesdays.
I swear we just podcast. It's all
it's like in Half-Baked, guy on the couch. It's just podcast in the room over there. You guys don't leave.
It's true. And Corey's here because we've got a great show in store in terms of talking about music. We mentioned it earlier. We're going to be talking about the recently released Yesterday. So stick around as we do that. But before we do, Spence, give them an opening credits.
The Filmlosophers podcast is brought to you by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios. Each Wednesday morning, head over and download the latest episode on your favorite streaming platforms such as Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, and Audio Boom, and Pandora.
And
now,
Pandora.
I guess we're adding that to the list of junk.
That's right.
Connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter at twitter.com/philosophy101. Finally, check out our entire list of episodes at filmlosophers.com. We have over 170 episodes to choose from.
We do, and we're actually proud of every single one of those because, you know what? It's hard to get to 170. You know, you don't see many people get to 170, but we made it. And oddly enough, just a real quick tangent, Corey here actually in the Video Game Bang just hit, what was that, 500?
Ooh, yeah, nice. Yeah, so, we hit episode 500 last month.
Yeah, so I mean, that's a goal.
That's the goal.
But 170 is nothing to laugh at or just look shyly on, so we're proud of our 170. We're proud of our 17, well, oh, not 17.
170. You dropped a zero there.
You know what? Let's just get started on the review. And like I said, we're going to be talking about the recently released Yesterday, the film that actually was kind of hitting that indie circuit. And a lot of people hadn't heard of this movie until it started getting a lot of buzz, until after the fact, all the low-key Beatle fans and those people who like are just mad fans of that era. I know Corey's a huge like musicophile. The dude just adores, like, we're actually in his studio and he has a record player right behind us with a sound sit up and there's a music, you know, there's a soundboard and records, and so Corey's a big music fan.
I dabble in music.
That he does.
This movie was, to put it in perspective, I haven't seen a movie in the theaters that wasn't produced by Marvel in about 10 years. So this was a big step for me. It had to be really good, and I was excited about this one like for months, and then I came and saw it opening weekend, so this was a big deal for me.
There you go. Well, before we jump into the movie, Spence, why don't you give him that official synopsis goodness?
Jack Malik is a struggling singer-songwriter in an English seaside town whose dreams of fame are rapidly fading. Despite the fierce devotion and support of his childhood best friend, Ellie, after a freak bus accident during a mysterious global blackout, Jack wakes up and discovers that the Beatles have never existed, performing songs by the greatest band in history to a world that has never heard them. Jack becomes an overnight sensation, but soon finds that there is a cost to the fame and fortune, and Jack isn't sure if there's something that he's ready to pay.
Directed by Danny Boyle, the film stars Himesh Patel, Lily James, Kate McKinnon, and Ed Sheeran as a fictionalized version of himself. A couple quick notes. According to the director, Danny Boyle, some 20 Beatles songs were secured for use in this film, of which about 17 appear in the final cut. Expensive as it was to get the rights to the song, it's still only the second most expensive quote-unquote asset he has acquired for a film, with ensuring Leonardo DiCaprio's face taking the top seat. So, and also real quick note, in the film, the actor who plays Jack, Himesh Patel, he actually did all his own singing as well as playing the guitar and piano.
Oh, so, that's impressive.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I had no idea. Like, it sounded really good. And when something sounds that good, you usually assume it's been pre-recorded or it's someone else that has that talent.
Well, no, the singing voice did sound a lot like him. So, in the theater, I, bought it as him.
Who? Himesh?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, they do have people who sound alike, but...
I mean. Yeah, I know, but usually, some people, you can tell.
True.
The guy's a double threat.
Oh, no, triple threat, because he plays the piano and the guitar.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't recognize this dude from anything else. Is there anything else that a normie like me would recognize him from?
He was in EastEnders if you were in England. That makes sense.
If you were in England, is that what you said?
Yeah, EastEnders.
Because you do know we record in the U.S.
Yes. I know what EastEnders is. I threw it out there. Maybe you saw it.
I appreciate your faith in me.
I mean, a lot, looking at his IMDb, a lot of what he's done prior to this was just a lot of TV series and a couple of shorts, but nothing, no claim to fame. So,
except to EastEnders.
Except for EastEnders, whatever the heck that is. but I think it's one thing to note. I think the great thing about having the amount of people at this particular table as we do this conversation, one thing really good to note is that we are actually all fans of music in different, well, in some same ways and some different, because of the fact that, unbeknownst to most people, Spencer actually plays the bass.
Oh, this is where we're going with this.
Well, I'm just saying.
It's like you say, he's the biggest Beatle fan because I'm like,
Spencer has been biggest. Around since the Beatles. And so
I've seen Spencer play the bass. He can play the bass better than Ringo Starr for sure.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah, and let's not back that claim up with anything.
And kind of in that same, area of sorting, Corey is an really impressive drummer. And
come on. Is this why you brought me on the show? Made me blush.
I'm just saying, you've played drums for a good portion of your life.
I'm no John Lennon, but I know my way around the kit.
Let's not be too modest. I mean, the guy's really good. And we've actually all played together. I play piano. Oh, also, Corey sings. I don't know if most people know that. That's a funny little fact.
No.
Corey has even offered at one point in time while we were playing together to put a microphone on the drum set so that he could sing backup while we were playing. So if that's not confidence in your ability, then I don't know what is.
I don't remember that. I don't recall that.
I recall that very good. I definitely don't recall that. But we all here have a love for music, and it shows because of the fact of obviously with Corey's music collection in the corner, I have my own record collection at home, and Spencer actually just got a recent record player as well.
Yes, you gave me one.
I did with the first album being the Black Panther soundtrack. So yes. I am proud of that. That's not racist. So
no, I love that soundtrack.
It's a good soundtrack.
It's a great soundtrack.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the great things about this particular conversation, that we'll be able to add that input of people who love music. I think I can earnestly say for everybody here, I think we all love music.
And music movies too. They don't come around too often where they're really good. You got your Almost Famous out there. And Rockstar.
And mind
another
you,
really good one for me.
There's a separation between music movies and musicals.
Yes, 100%.
And that's what I want to differentiate with this film, because this is not a musical. This is a music movie, Corey put it. Because musicals, you got La La Land, you got everything else in between. I'm just not going to go into all of them, because there's like Hairspray and all that stuff.
I'm not a filmlosopher, but I feel like the way to differentiate them is, in this movie, there are music sequences, but they're actually happening. So if the guy has a guitar and he's singing, it's not like in La La Land where reality cuts off for a second, everybody knows coordinated dances all of a sudden, and then it pauses and everyone's like, All right, where were we? You kind of continue back where you were. There is a lot of music in the film, but it's not like Grease.
Exactly. It doesn't take an aside from the whole story. It's actually a performance in the film.
Yeah.
And the music is not so much like a part of the scene itself, but it's actually just one facet of it. Like, people are in a bar and they're drinking and talking and there's somebody on stage playing. You hear the music, but that's not taking over everything. Yeah. If it's good music, it's taking over everything. But if it's just somebody playing, you see people drinking beer. You know, not everybody's floating around in the stars and, you know, city of stars. Da, 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 da. Don't look at me like that, Spencer.
Okay, anyway.
How do you deal with this, Spencer?
I don't know. I just kind of power through it.
170 episodes, you sure?
So, with that said, one of the things that I kind of want to get perspective from you guys is, you know what, expectations before the film. I honestly, like I said, I didn't know much about the movie, so expectations were pretty low. Like, I honestly, I'll be, like, dead honest, I wasn't looking forward to seeing this at all. I was like, it's another one of those music movies. I've seen them before. Like, it's you have a movie that's trying to incorporate one of the greatest bands, the rock and roll bands of all time, and have some guy sing their songs and claim them as his own. That seems like, to me, a big no-no. Like, heck to the no.
Kind of. What I took away is the one thing that made me interested in this movie is because I've had that thought before multiple times. Like, you hear these legendary rock bands, and the Beatles is the epitome of legendary rock band.
Yeah.
And you think, like, man, I wonder if these songs would hold weight today. Like, what if some dude just came up with these types of songs? Would it still, are they really timeless? And I feel like that's kind of what the premise was going for, instead of just like some, you know, rando tries to take credit for the Beatles. Yeah. I was looking at it as like, okay, let's see what would happen if the Beatles didn't exist in modern era with your Ed Sheerans and your, you know, Billie Eilish's. What's going to happen if some dude just comes up with a couple Beatles tunes? Can he make it?
Exactly. Like Corey said, do they still hold water, essentially? Like, yeah. Will people still be interested in them, go nuts over them and everything? But I think for me, that was the biggest thing. Like, I'm at a point where, because of, like Corey said, hadn't seen anything other than a Marvel movie in the last 10 years, I've been oversaturated to a point to where I'm not really willing to see a movie now unless I know that the movie's going to be, like, unless it's, like, worth watching.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, I'll give it a watch, and I've been proven wrong several times, mostly on this podcast, but I've been proven
that
wrong.
That happens a lot on my show, too.
But, like, it's okay if, for me, to come into a film and think, all right, I know I'm going to hate this movie. I'm just going to watch it so that I know I can say, yes, I gave it a fair shake. And this was one of those movies, plain and simple. Like, I didn't expect this to be anything other than like, okay, he tried to do this. Oh, he tried to do these things for the Beatles, but he's not the Beatles. Essentially, that was my biggest thing. He's not any of the Beatles. He's not Paul McCartney. So, right. But yeah, that's where I was at. What about you, Spence?
So, about a month ago, my mom and I went to see The Secret Life of Pets.
We're like, so, it started 18 years ago.
That is so sweet.
Yeah, well, it was her birthday. Well, so
I took my mom to see Yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we went and saw it. Yeah, it was...
Yeah, so the trailer for Yesterday played before The Secret Life of Pets, and she's like, oh, we should go see that one, too. And I was like,
Mom, calm down. You're on a one movie for 6 months. We're not friends.
Well, no, the problem is my mom sees movies so fewly, she's got credits, so she can just come back. So, like, I was like, okay, I guess we can see this. I don't know about it. And so Eddie mentioned it for the podcast, so I was like, oh, this is perfect. I can knock out two things with this one movie. Like, I'm a good son and I'm doing a review.
I'm a good son.
And so that is the entire, everything I knew about this movie before seeing it.
Wow.
Yeah, I knew nothing about this going into it besides that one trailer.
What about you, Corey, aside from what you mentioned earlier?
I had kind of high hopes because, like I said, it would take a pretty interesting premise to get me to go see something that's not a superhero movie. So when I saw... I actually I've always been a classic rock fan. Like when I was in high school, I was in a little battle of the bands type thing, and we played some Aussie songs and we won first place. And then I was like all into, you know, Led Zeppelin and all those kinds of stuff. And then I kind of always did the like, oh, the Beatles, they're like a boy band. Like they're too pop, you know, I want to hold your hand. I want, you know, AC/DC. And then I had a coworker when I was working at the radio station you and I worked at for a bit.
Yeah.
There's a guy named Matt Brown, a.k.a. the Toast Robot. The
Toast Robot.
Yeah. He gave me, and he brought up the Beatles once, and I was like, dude, the Beatles are whack. You know, there's so many better bands out there. Have you ever heard of Van Halen? And then he ended up giving me like a mixtape, basically. He was like, listen to this and just, you know, just listen to it. Tell me what you think. And he put Beatles songs on there that, I mean, Beatles were so eclectic and lasted so long, you kind of forget how many hits they had. Mm-hmm. And so even to this day, I'm not the biggest fan of super early Beatles. But when you start getting into their more psychedelic stuff, like Strawberry Fields and, you know, anything
Sergeant
on
Pepper.
Sergeant Pepper's, yeah, anything on those later albums, you know, they went ham. And they were the building mm-hmm. blocks for a lot of the bands that I did end up loving, like Pink Floyd and... You know, so I ended up making a full turn, and I've been, like, really hooked on the Beatles for the last few years. So, really, I saw Beatles, I saw a movie, and with a cool premise, so I was 100% down and had pretty high expectations.
I think one of the other things, I think it's just safe to say, we all grew up in a pretty religious setup, I guess. There was that premise at certain points in our life where, like, religion was, like, heavily influenced on our life. And I know for me, growing up, one of the things that I was told was that the Beatles were satanic because of the fact that if you played the records backward, they would say, like, subliminal messages.
Wait, this is the band people said that about?
This was one of them. There was a bunch of them. Led Zeppelin, The Doors, The Beatles.
Well, there are parts of Beatles songs that are in reverse, but they don't say, like, give your life to Satan or anything.
No.
They were just on a lot of LSD.
It's just, it was, I think that was also one of the things that was behind my mindset of, like, moving forward and actually building a music collection. And one of the things that got me hesitantly away from the Beatles, and I didn't find the Beatles, unfortunately, until later in my life. and when I did, I was like hiding them away, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't want to get possessed by the devil by playing this album. but like, I started listening to them, like, oh my gosh, which is why I hold the Beatles in such high regard. And I think that added to like my, I don't want to see a movie where it's just totally going to miff on like everything that I love about the Beatles, you know?
Yeah, no, and I don't think it did. I think it was more of like, it was a huge tribute to like how timeless their skills were as songwriters. And then on top of that, kind of the status of today's music industry.
Oh, and completely. How
kind of toxic it is.
I think that's a really great point. Like, especially after the movie, like, so kind of first impressions after the film ended, I was like, dang, I don't ever want to become famous.
Yeah.
Like, that is literally the first thing I thought. Like, I don't ever want to make it big. Like, I will hide my piano and not speak in front of any person that I think could probably send me to LA for that.
Yeah. No, that was the embodiment of Kate McKinnon's character.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just
drink the chalice. Like, no.
Yeah. They chose the perfect, because I was worried. I'm not a big Kate McKinnon fan.
Mm.
She's been on SNL forever, and I love Saturday Night Live to death, but I feel like everybody has an expiration date on that show, and now it's just like when she comes on and does the same thing she's been doing for 5 years, I roll my eyes, and all those same mannerisms have now carried over into film.
Yeah.
So I feel like I've seen everything she has to give, and you know, the other movies she's been in, Ghostbusters and stuff, I wasn't like...
Yeah.
She was never a highlight for me. But in this, she was cast perfectly because she brought her very Kate McKinnon mannerisms and timing, and it just worked in this super scummy talent manager role.
Yeah, because I kind of have to agree. Her and Melissa McCarthy both kind of do the same role every time they're in any film.
Yeah.
It's nothing out of the norm. And so Melissa McCarthy does like this whole pratfall physical comedy thing, and it's like that in every movie she's in. And Kate McKinnon plays the awkward, like, woman who just doesn't fit in and will continue to make things awkward. And so it was like that in every other movie prior to this. But I think her being the whatever she was for the studio, I think it fit because of the fact that like she just made every scene she was in so cringeworthy.
Yeah, 100%.
She's really good at that.
What about you, Spence? First impressions as soon as you got out of the theater?
Really just questions about legality. Because
wait, what?
Because
we're talking about music still, right?
The same movie?
I'm just making sure.
No, because if you can't prove something exists, how is it not your own?
Oh.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, no, people just... I was thinking about that exact same thing. They just would have thought he was insane. Can you imagine if Kanye West today was like, guys, I gotta be honest, I didn't write College Dropout song. I didn't write any of my music. I stole it from, these guys named Peter, Joe, Paul, and Ringo. Peter, Joe, Paul, and Ringo. That's the... And we would have been like, well... Can you prove it? And he'll be like, no. They're like, well, then you wrote the songs, idiot.
Yeah. It was like that little section of the movie where, like, that's where I got stuck on, because that's also what leads this into being kind of like a horror-esque movie. Because if things are just randomly deleting out of the universe with no real reason or cause, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
Like, you wake up yourself, like, by yourself one day, it's like, were you married yesterday? You don't know, and you have no proof. You have no idea what happened.
Isn't there a term for that? Like that whole Bernstein or Bernstein Bears?
The Mancala.
No, the Mandela.
Mancala.
No, it's called Mancala now. Mancala. You didn't know that?
Exactly.
It's happening again right now.
That's a Mandala effect.
The Mandala effect. Got it.
No, but it's like that kind of thing. Like, we don't know what slips off of history and things like that. And you're right. That is pretty terrifying. I would like to extend on that a little tiny bit on what I walked away with the movie, because I didn't know how they were going to justify it. I thought maybe he'd go to bed, you know, and then he'd wake up and they were just gone. And, you know, it really didn't even matter too much, because I just wanted to see the premise unfold. So they ended up doing the thing where, you know, the lights all flicker. All the lights go out across the world, across the universe. And he ends up getting hit by a bus, and then he wakes up, and then you're like, okay, obviously this is when the thing happened.
Yeah.
Now he's going to go through, he's going to learn the lesson that, you know, maybe the music business isn't what he wants, and true love was in front of his eyes the entire time.
Yeah.
And then he'll wake up from his coma, and, you know, the Beatles are back. They didn't do that.
No, they did not.
The Beatles are just gone.
which I have to say, I appreciate that ending much more, because the other ending would have just seemed very romantic comedy trope-ish.
Yeah,
like that's every single romantic. There was, what was that dumb one with Rebel Wilson just recently that she just did, where they actually did the same thing and she woke up and everything was back to normal. It's actually a movie on comedic rom-com tropes. It's called Isn't It Romantic?
Oh, yeah, okay. That's
but it right. ends it ends the exact same way. She wakes up like, oh my god, I'm back to normal and blah blah blah. And but I can't stand that.
Well, I can't either. I couldn't stand how they did it this way, so I had to figure out ways to justify it, because, you know, everything we're told is that, you know, you go into a coma, you figure things out, and then you come back. That's just how TV works.
You figure out life.
That's a story. You know, so I'm like, okay, maybe he's just in a coma forever. You know, he's just a vegetable. He never woke up, and this whole thing is a dream, because
the horror story thickens.
Yeah. No, the whole thing is like, this is his dying moments, because he's like laying in the street just bleeding out from the bus.
That would have been wow. And you brought your mom to this.
Yeah, no, at the end of the movie, my mom was like, so the Beatles are just gone.
Oh my gosh. Like, no, actually, out of all that, it's actually, he's stuck in the Animus, like in Assassin's Creed, and it's just perpetually in a time frame where that's all just, I don't know, like, I like, because of the horror fan in me, I like the premise that this is actually just him being stuck in this
purgatory-ish.
Like, it's like the whole Grease conspiracy theory at the end. Have you heard of the Grease conspiracy theory, Corey?
No.
So the Grease conspiracy theory is that everything that happens at the high school and all the way up until the end is kind of like a flash in the mindset of Danny as he is dying from drowning after trying to save Sandy.
Oh,
and when they're flying in the car...
Tell me more.
And when they're flying, that's actually when they're actually dying and they go to heaven. I think that happens.
I think when anything hits Grease level, people start making weird ass theories like that.
They have to because of those movies.
Yeah. Like, I was watching another movie or TV show, and I can't even remember which. Oh, Lebowski. I love The Big Lebowski. And it's definitely hit, you know, Grease levels of popularity in the fandom. Yeah. And for them, they're like, what if Donnie never existed? You know, and he's just in the dude's mind. You never hear any, but you do see people talking to Donnie, and they brought it up to the Coen brothers. Donnie! And they're like, yeah, Donnie exists, you idiots. Like, what are you guys talking about? So I think people just start wiling out with
stuff. Although, you notice you only see Donnie when you see Jesus.
Oh, my God. So no, that's not true.
So back on this movie, like, one of the things that were you done on your okay, like, one of the things I have to appreciate about this particular movie is the fact that, realizing after the fact, Hamish actually did all of his own singing, and all of the music seemed very genuine. Like, they didn't just pick random songs, they picked the right songs for this movie and had this particular actor, Hamish Patel, sing them and play them and perform them. Like, it wasn't just like, oh, he's going to play the song, but it's going to sound like, you know, Paul McCartney and John Lennon and all them.
I think they did a great job, too, with that in mind, keeping it legitimately funny.
Yeah.
Like, this wasn't a comedy like you'd go see Austin Powers or something crazy, you know, where they're making, you know, falling over each other. But there was just really good situational humor that they would kind of do. And, like, even the banter between the friends seemed really good. Like,
oh, yeah.
I ended up, like, I left it like, man, I wish I had friends like this. These guys are cool.
That's good to know. Spence, we got to up our game.
Yeah, buy me a guitar, please. No, but see, like, that was good. And then I can't remember. The guy who played, like, his band manager.
Lily Thompson?
No.
Lily James?
Oh, no. She was incredible. But I'm talking about the guy who was, like, his roadie, Rocky.
Oh, Rocky.
Yeah.
Joel Fry is his name.
Yeah.
He was from Game of Thrones. And I thought he killed it, too. Anytime he was on, like, it was hilarious. Oh, especially towards the end when he's giving that big speech. Like, because there's a lot of parody with, like, the actual Beatles. The Beatles played their last concert on that same rooftop. So when he was going to do his album launch, he chose that rooftop. You know, and so when he goes out there to do it, he's got his buddy Rocky, and he's giving the speech, this is going to change your life right when we walk through these doors. And there's a nice monologue. They open it. It's, oh, wrong door.
That is, it's great to have a film where it balances all that out. Like, this could totally be, like Spence was saying, this could totally have leaned into the arena where it just seemed creepy and he's making all this money and whatever. I was honestly thinking this teetered on the same premise as the first episode of the recent series for Twilight Zone. Have you guys seen the first episode?
Twilight.
Which one was that?
With
was this, that the one with the
Kumail
plane?
Nanjiani.
Oh yeah,
he's a comedian.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Kumail Nanjiani plays a comedian who's trying to make it at this club, and he ends up getting visited by Tracy Morgan. Tracy Morgan, however, tells him, like, "Hey, fame comes at a heavy price. So if you want this fame, just tell me, and you can have it." And he's like, well, yeah, I want it. And so something happens, and he wakes up, and he keeps trying to do this same set about the amendments or whatever, and it never hits.
I got to watch this because this sounds freaking phenomenal.
And he starts going like, oh, you know what? I have this dog, and this dog is so freaking whatever, blah, blah, blah. And he starts riffing on his dog, and everybody in the room is like roaring laughing. And he's like, oh, okay. And after the set's done, he goes home to his wife. And he's like, oh, by the way, where's whatever his name, the dog's name? He's like, what are you talking about? He's like, our dog. And she's like, we've never had a dog. And so for the laughs that he wants, every time he brings up something, that gets removed from his life.
Oh.
So that's the caveat. The fame is there for him, but it's at a cost.
Wow. So
I was thinking, like, along those lines, like, if that was going to start happening, like, the closer and closer he gets to the fame that he wants, the more and more he's going to lose everything that he has. And I was like, as much as I think that's, like, cheating off of Twilight Zone, I would have loved the way that ended. But that's just the horror fan in me. Like, I would have loved for this to go the horror aspect. But I'm appreciative that they took the time to create those breaks, those comedic breaks, where it wasn't just straight, like, oh, this about music, that about music, this about that, this about that. It's like, this is this, and then Rocky says something funny.
Yeah.
Or this and this. And Rocky comes in and takes the whole bag of chips instead of just, like, taking one. So I just, that was something fun to me.
I think this movie was really good at balancing itself.
Yeah.
Which I don't think I expected it to be that good at balancing, you know, all these elements mm-hmm. when I first walked in.
That's true. Like, there was a lot going on at one point. You got Ed Sheeran.
Yeah.
You know, the plot line with his parents.
Stalker Ed Sheeran, who shows up at the guy's house.
Ed Sheeran kind of made that movie for me. I was worried. He's that was the role for him. Like, I don't know if he's the greatest of actors, but as playing himself in this set of circumstances was so freaking funny.
I like how he has his own music as his ringtone.
Yeah, they did a good job making him like grounded. You kind of like him and stuff, but at the same time, he's still a Hollywood tool.
Yeah,
with his own, you know, music as his thing, and trying to have him change the lyrics of Hey Jude to Hey Dude. You know, Ed Sheeran made me do it. So good. So yeah, props to Ed Sheeran, man, getting it in.
Yeah. And there was a lot of great points in the film. Like, we were talking about Kate McKinnon earlier. She added a lot of that cringy, still kind of funny elements. I thought his parents were hilarious. The dad was, like, completely clueless to what was going on with his son's life. Like, you thought there was a point where his dad was going to do this huge congratulatory speech to him, and he's like, there's sandwiches on the table. Is anybody gonna eat? I'm like, oh, my gosh. And I didn't know Lily James could actually be that funny and still... Yeah, because Lily James is more known for roles like she was the opposite in Baby Driver. She was Debbie from the actual cafe.
Okay.
She was also Cinderella in the live action Cinderella movie. She was Elizabeth Bennet in the Pride and Prejudice and zombie movies. So she has acting chops and whatnot, but like I didn't know that she could do comedy that well, and she was good. Like, she balanced Himesh Patel really well in this movie as being like a romantic opposite. It wasn't to the point to where I was not bored, but like overwhelmed by just like, this is just too much romance. I just need a break from this. Like, at no point in time did I feel like the romance was being pushed more than any other element in the film.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was believable.
Yeah.
I thought it was good. I saw the movie with my wife, and usually one of the things that she points out to me is like, why can't friends just stay friends, you know, in shows? You know, why does it always have to turn into romance? But so I've been kind of paying attention to that more when I watch series and shows. But I feel like this one, it was justified how they kept showing, like, you know, he won his battle of the bands, you know, and she was like his, you know, all enamored with him and trying to help him make it through his career. So I thought it was really sweet, their dynamic. And it wasn't like rushed. And I feel bad for her boyfriend. She ended up
Gavin,
the one guy who did end up like seeing how great she was, you know, falling for her, and it looked like they had a good thing, and then she just dumped him for the famous guy.
Which, mind you, I mean, I think that adds to the believability. Not the whole dumping Gavin thing, no, but like the dynamic.
Justice for Gavin, everybody.
Hashtag justice for Gavin.
They gave him some though. They made sure that he had like a little arm candy at the end there.
Okay, but still, like, during their entire relationship, Gavin knew he was number two, and he just hung out there. And I'm like, dude, you gotta take care of yourself.
Sometimes you just gotta wait in the hiding.
Yeah, better to be number two. One
day, number one will fall one day.
Number one will fall someday.
But I think I like the dynamic with Lily James and Himesh Patel in this one, because of the fact that I think that adds to what Corey was saying earlier, the believability of their like romance, because it was this lifelong friendship that they've had, or this friendship forever long, that she chose to, you know, push down her feelings for him because she cared about him so much that she wanted to see him succeed. And I can see that, like, that happens all the time. Like, how many times are we always like hearing about people saying, oh, you know what, I always had a crush on him, but I just wanted him to be happy, so I just let him be, and we were just friends and blah blah blah.
You just let it be.
Let it be. Spencer, don't roll your eyes.
I'll do what I like.
But I think I like that aspect, because even in the conversations that they were having, and she was like, you know, you never noticed me. She's like, when was I ever going to get out of, you know, this, you know, the friend zone and make it into this area? And he was, it's not that he just didn't care.
He was so focused on his career.
Exactly.
They made that very clear. And I like that too, that it wasn't like that he wasn't interested in her. He was just so interested in trying to make it as a musician.
It was never malicious. It was never him being like hurtful to her, because they were always close. Like, if you hadn't have recognized that they were friends at the beginning, it would have totally felt like they were a couple.
Yeah.
She was over here helping him carry his stuff. They were over here going to different venues. And you didn't think so, Spence?
No, I totally agree with you.
Uh-huh.
You just hadn't said something wrong yet, so I didn't say anything.
Oh, okay. Well, good to know.
It's a world record. And he was like, wait, I've gone this long and Spencer hasn't corrected me?
I'm like,
what's wrong? How long
have I been? I think my watch is broken. Hold on. Somebody check if the Beatles are still around. Music. Beatles music. But another aspect of the film that you have to appreciate is how much like Beatles knowledge this thing dropped. I had no idea how much of like what we have today or the things that are around us today, how much were influenced by the Beatles. Like he would go and he was looking up like songs for the Beatles, and obviously they weren't on the internet. He would look up the Beatles themselves, obviously they weren't there. But then something would happen and he was like, oh, what I wouldn't give for a cigarette. And they're like, what's a cigarette, mate? And he's like, what?
Which is that's, so confusing.
Yeah, I think that's completely unrelated. I don't think that if the Beatles didn't exist, there wouldn't be cigarettes.
I don't know. The popularization.
What do you mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
That existed before the Beatles.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure cigarettes existed.
It's not so much the fact that they didn't exist. It was the popularization of it.
Was completely the Beatles?
I don't.
Do you not remember?
True. I think it's more.
Do I not remember being alive when the Beatles were around? No, I don't.
I think it has more to do with the nicotine and the addictive nature of cigarettes.
There was a certain point in history when outlets were saying that the Beatles were, quote, bigger than Jesus. Like, seriously, the Beatles were the biggest thing during the 60s.
Okay.
Yeah, but just because something's bigger, yeah, like Jesus still exists.
Yeah.
I'm just saying the fact that...
And he doesn't sell cigarettes.
Yeah.
The fact that you're wearing an Apollo Lunar Module shirt...
You just wanted to point that out.
I did want to point that out. So what?
So hurtful.
It tells me that was influenced by the actual moon landing. So if the moon landing hadn't have happened, would you still be wearing that shirt?
Yeah, but the Beatles didn't invent cigarettes. Or like, it's not like a guy listened to Blackbird and was like, hey, you know what? I want to smoke... A tobacco. I don't know. Is that how it works?
Let's roll a tobacco.
Man. Okay. So let me ask you this. Did the Beatles have any like heavily cigarette promoting songs then?
Corey?
Yeah.
See?
You didn't know? The song I Wanna Hold Your Hand. It's about smoking cigarettes.
It's actually holding the hand of a cigarette.
Listen to it again.
Now I'm like wondering. No, but like I know most of it obviously isn't just focus so much on the fact that they didn't invent it, but like there's a ton of pictures of them out there where they're smoking like crazy.
Yeah. I don't know. I think one thing that was pretty interesting though about the movie was that they kind of took it from another little bit of realism was that he doesn't just know all the Beatles songs.
Yeah.
Like, that was cool.
He had to like rack his brain. He got a few like lyrics wrong in the beginning. He had to go to England, Liverpool, and start like going to the places that they sang about to try and repiece the songs
Abbey
together.
Road and
Strawberry Fields.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the most true to form things they could have done for this film because of the fact that most modern day millennials / this generation of people, especially musicians. Yes, we know some of the songs, but we don't know every song.
Yeah.
And this is a clear indication, like, he's walking down the street, okay, what was the name of the song? How did that song go? Like,
and I also thought it was pretty cool, like, what was it, with Eleanor Rigby, where, like, they were going through, where he was singing through it, and, like, you know, it was doing, like, a music video, but it was, like, changing it as he was trying to remember how it went.
Yeah. This movie really kind of played on the fact that if this ever happened, like, how would that fit in the reality of it all? And I think that was a good point of realism. Like, honestly, like, he didn't have the compendium of, like, every single Beatles album in his room because, obviously, they disappeared, so he couldn't prove that. He didn't know them off the top of his head. He knew how to play one song from them right off the top of his head, which was Yesterday, which is the song that's in the trailer. But aside from that, he had to build all that back up.
Relearn them, yeah.
Exactly.
One missed opportunity, I think, for like a little plot point or, you know, something to make everyone go home feeling good about themselves was they made it a big point when he was unsuccessful that he had this one original song that he was, it was like
Summer
his,
Song.
Yeah, Summer Song. And that was his hit, you know, and all his friends would kind of make fun of him, you know.
Play Summer Song!
Yeah. And so I was, and then my original thought was that, you know, the music industry is so, like, formulaic. Yeah. You know, and it's just a bunch of people in suits kind of like picking who they want, you know, the next Johnny Bravo to be.
Yeah.
And what I was hoping for is because then he gets popular and he gets in the real studio after he's got his money and he's about to put together the actual album. And then he tries to sneak Summer Song in, yeah. into the recordings. And Kate McKinnon's character's like, you know what? That- All those songs were so good, you know, like... Strawberry Fields, amazing. Eleanor Rigby, beautiful song. But that Summer Song one was shit. Like,
she's like, it was really bad, but I wasn't too sure. But I didn't care enough to hear to the second half. Hear the second half.
Yeah,
I'm like, that's how you know it's bad, when they just check out midway through.
That's what I was thinking. Like, oh, that could have been really cool. That or some affirmation for people out there that, you know, his Summer Song would have been, you know, eligible to make it onto that album, you know, just because the way music is perceived once you're popular.
Yeah.
You know, so I was kind of hoping for like some positive messaging. So like, hey guys, if you're a songwriter out there watching this movie, you know, it's not because your music sucks. You know, it's, there's this lightning strike that needs to happen. But this movie was like, nah, if you ain't Paul McCartney, you a bitch.
Like, it really did, like, knock that. Because I felt, I'm like, okay, he's performing that Summer Song. I figured, like, it would have been like, oh, this is a good one. Okay, blah, blah, blah. But they just struck it down, like, right there.
Yeah,
right
they make
then.
The album, and they never go back to it after that. Like, the whole first Summer Song thing was just to set up that punchline. When I thought it could have been used to send, like, a deeper message to those struggling musicians out there actually watching the movie.
Spencer, did you have any issues with the film? Like, what were some of your hangups?
Here's minor one. I think since the Beatles were such a big influence on music, it probably would have made more sense if modern music was different than the exact same thing that it turned out to be. Like if Ed Sheeran had slightly worse songs, because Ed Sheeran said that he was inspired by the Beatles, but if there's no Beatles, he's not, you know, the same Ed Sheeran that we have now.
Yeah.
So it would have been kind of cool if, like, we came back and, like, he listens to modern music and it's different than what we know and it's slightly worse.
Ed Sheeran is influenced by the Doors and walking around without a shirt on. I can see that now. No, but that actually makes a really good point. Like, because there's a ton of musicians out there that were heavily, like, let's just be honest, rock and roll itself was heavily influenced by the Beatles.
Yeah.
So
it makes sense for it to be different.
Yeah, modern music to be different. I can see that.
But I can also understand why that's going down a whole rabbit hole of things that you might
this
not.
This coming from the man who's over here pondering like, oh, this movie must have been a horror movie.
Well, I still stand by that, but I'm just saying.
I don't know, though. Like, adding that element to it, I think would have it would have steered too much out of the range of focus for what this main character's journey is all about. Because I think doing that, it would have been good to see, but then at the same time, I would have been wondering, like, who else's music suffered because of this? Because I know they do remove, like, Oasis from the history, yeah. Which, of all the bands to remove that have been influenced by the Beatles, Oasis, you know, that just...
I'm not a huge Oasis buff, so I took that as, like, a throwaway.
I was like,
I thought they had a Beatles member.
Oasis?
No.
No, oh, but if it was, so that's like one of my one hangups. Like if they just input Oasis in there just to linger back on that first song that he sang to get what's her name's attention, it's kind of a weak like connecting point.
Yeah, I agree with that. I thought that was kind of strange that they kind of made the Oasis, you know, at the beginning and then just kind of shoehorn them in there at the end. Other than maybe that's like his favorite band.
Yeah, which it doesn't. Yeah. It didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
So, are you looking it up over there?
I am. Cerebro? So, give me, like, a few minutes.
But I think other than that, I mean, Kate McKinnon, like we said, Kate McKinnon character, her character was pretty good. Ed Sheeran, he was good. I think Ed Sheeran shows us, his performance in this has showed us that people who are artists, like musical artists, can actually play good roles as long as they're just like playing some form of themselves.
Yeah, and looking at it from this scope, like, I think that the movie was made better with Ed Sheeran's involvement as opposed to just hiring a better actor and just making up the songs, or, you know, and saying he was somebody. So I think, you know, that lended some credibility to the premise, made it a little bit more believable, because it's like, oh, we know Ed Sheeran, and he is pretty much one of the best songwriters of our time right now.
Exactly.
So it was cool. And in his, from his perspective, like, he's part of an actual, like, movie, you know, where he's taken seriously as an actor, and he's gets to, you know, in a roundabout way, even though he's kind of the heel of the situation, shows a lot of love for the Beatles.
Yeah,
that's so pretty cool.
And it like you said, it adds to the believability. And I just think, I mean, Ed Sheeran was legitimately good in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like, we've had roles where, you know, artists have come in and tried to play a particular role, but it wasn't something that they're used to. Like, it's not their nature, it's not their personality, so it really kind of makes it difficult and hard to believe. Take for instance, the one actress that's in Umbrella Academy,
Mary J. Blige.
Yeah, like, I can't see her as an assassin in that movie at all, but she's in it, and I mean, mind you, it's fun. She's okay, she's all right,
and I love her.
Yeah, she does a good job.
Yeah, well, because you've known her for some time in her musical career.
Yeah.
So that's what makes... But, like, in terms of, like, if she was just... If you remove the musical career, is she still the same person?
I would believe she would punch me in the face as an assassin, yes.
Like, you must have different relationship with Mary J. Blige than everyone else. Like, yep, nope, can't talk about it, but yep, restraining order.
What?
We could work it out.
What'd you find, Spence?
Oasis was heavily influenced by the Beatles because the brothers, apparently, were really into them.
Yeah, the brothers were the lead of the band.
And they hated each other.
Oh, yeah. That's essentially what drove a wedge between them, I think.
The Beatles, yeah.
There you go. The Beatles.
I think the one thing that I did really, really like about the movie is that just the thought that it was going to, you know, just pass the torch, you know, to a newer, maybe younger audience who hadn't been familiar with the Beatles and just went to go see it with their parents or something.
Yeah.
Like, I've been in my old age, like, more trying to be less agitated by things. Like, there's artist Lana Del Rey.
Mm.
You know, she just did a cover of a Sublime song called Doin' Time. And like, Lana Del Rey is so far removed for anything I would, you know, seek out to listen to typically. And Sublime is my favorite band of all time.
I was going
to
say.
So my first gut instinct was, this is horseshit. You know, and just start kicking things. And then I was like, you know what? This is a cool tribute to a band I love that will open people's eyes to this, you know, and keep their music alive going forward to a new generation. So I kind of like that whole thing. And I think the best part of this movie, too, like we were talking about how it shows kind of the, you know, how ugly the music industry can be, was with the big John Lennon reveal.
Oh, my gosh.
Which I think was like, that was pretty much the center point of the movie.
Yeah.
I don't know how they brought him back to life
to record that.
Because I swear to God, I swear to you, I was not under the influence of any substances. And when he opened the door and it was John Lennon, I was like, holy shit. He was been alive this whole time?
He's been,
like, is this the reveal? Is this the Andy Kaufman? You know, like, he was alive the whole time on, you know, an island with Elvis? Like, it was kind of jarring.
Okay, my mom leaned over during that scene. She's like, that doesn't look anything like John Lennon.
How would you know? He died, like, 30 years ago.
He looked like John Lennon. I mean, I know him from, what is that? Once Upon a Time, he played Rumpelstiltskin or whatever.
Oh, is that the guy?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know it was him.
He's played in quite a bit of things.
They heavily made him up, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No doubt. Like, because after all the makeup and whatever else, they made him look like John Lennon.
Yeah. And the whole point was that, you know, obviously he didn't pursue music. So just because the Beatles' music didn't exist, the guys themselves did exist.
Yeah.
And he, you know, this kind of fanatical group of other people who also realized that the Beatles didn't exist They start hearing Beatles songs, and they start trying to reach out to this dude.
Yeah.
And they track him down just to tell him, like, hey, we're actually grateful for what you're doing, man. Like, the world needs the Beatles. Here's something for you. And it was his address.
Yeah.
He goes there and meets him, and that's the cool part. It's like, without the, you know, toxicity of the music industry and the fanatical fans, he just ended up being an artist who lived a very fulfilling life and didn't get assassinated.
I think that's a good takeaway. No, and mind you, like, I think going back to your earlier premise, like, I really do feel like I have to agree hardcore. We're in an age where a lot of people just don't understand the music that made what most of the music people are listening to nowadays. Like, nobody knows who the Doors are. Nobody listens to the Beatles or, you know, or the Beach Boys, or nobody listens to, you know, Aerosmith, or, well, old Aerosmith, not new Aerosmith, or like Black Sabbath, or like AC/DC, like Corey mentioned. Only AC/DC song most people know is just the Back in Black from the Iron Man movies. Like, other than that, nobody knows any other AC/DC song. And it's one of those things where this movie becomes ultimately a doorway for people to actually hear how cool these songs were, and to prove a big point that these songs still hold up even till today.
Yeah, and it's good that this is happening, because you know, we got, you know, we're getting older, and we're far removed from these songs and music and stuff. So, you know, we hold it alive through, you know, just you know, our childhoods and things like that our parents listen to. But you'd imagine that a lot of people of our generation that have kids aren't necessarily just exposing their kids to the Beatles. They're, you know, listening to what they're listening to.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for movies like, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody or Rocket Man, or, you know, these artists will disappear.
Yeah.
Because nobody's going to know. Like, when Ozzy Osbourne, you know, did the Osbournes. That's kind of what did it for us. You know, we'll never forget Ozzy because we had the Osbournes.
Sharon!
Yeah, exactly. If it weren't for that, we'd know a couple songs, you know. We'd know Crazy Train, but we wouldn't have, like, that connection to the art.
And even in talking about, like, Ozzy Osbourne, like, movies like School of Rock.
Yeah, another great one.
Great one that you know, who now doesn't know the opening line to the Immigrant Song?
Yeah. And I think Rock Band, too, for gamers.
Oh my gosh, Rock Band.
There's a lot of people, kids, you know, that...
Corey, bring in the video game aspect.
Well, because I work in, you know, esports, so a lot of the people I engage with on a daily basis are Gen Zers, like kids. Yeah. And a lot of times, like, they'll hear a song and be like, oh, I know that from Rock Band. You know,
because
they wouldn't have known other ways to find it.
No.
So it's kind of... I think there's just old people out there constantly trying to trick younger generations into keeping their art alive, because if you put it in a book, nobody's gonna remember it.
No.
You gotta come up with something.
Yeah, to put it in Rock Band.
Yeah, Guitar Hero, maybe.
And it's interesting that you say that, because of the fact when I went to go see it, I went to an early morning screening. I went to go check it out so I could make sure I get everything, you know, all the notes taken care of and everything. And I go, and I'm literally a seat away from this older, like, grandmother looking woman. And she's there sitting, and next to her are her three, there are these three kids, I'm assuming, are her grandkids. And they looked all under, like, the age of 12. But she's sitting there, and I'm like, this woman is not going to be able to control these kids during this movie. But, like, the entire time before the film starts, mind you, she would have been talking during the movie. Spence, you know what I would have done. Would have shushed them like crazy.
Are you one of those?
I am.
He shushed the baby once in the theater as if this baby could understand.
Wow.
Yep.
You're going to end up getting in a fight with one of these kids' parents.
I can only hope and pray. No, but this lady, before we start, she was like, you know, you have to understand. I forgot the kid's name, but she's like, you have to understand, this is the music that I grew up with. This is the songs that I remember when I was your age, I was listening to and I loved. And so I want you to listen to this so that way when we have a chance, you can sing it with grandma and grandpa and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, cool. Like, this was an opportunity for this woman who probably remembers when the Beatles were in their heyday. And she's going to share that with a generation, two generations away from her.
Yeah.
And say, like, this is what I grew up with and I want you to experience it. And I kid you not, during the entire movie, this woman's wiping her eyes because she's listening to the song, she's singing it, the end credits roll, and she's singing all the songs that are going on through the end credits. And I'm like, that's who I hope to be when I get to that age.
Yeah, know? Yeah. They did a good job of using, like, and there's other movies that have used Beatle music to tell their story. What's the other one that is like a legit musical? Damn.
From
Across the Universe.
Oh, yeah, Across the Universe.
Across the Universe. You know, the fact is the Beatles music is just freaking good. Like, top to bottom, there's songs that'll make you laugh. There's a Beatles song for every emotion.
Oh, completely.
You know, like, and there's some that'll make you cry, and there's some that can make you laugh. And at the end, when he's with the school children and they're singing Obladi Oblada,
yeah,
like, I was welling up a little tiny bit just because, you know, it was a perfect way to end, you know, what they told is a pretty good story for the past hour and a half. So the way that they used the music and the story that it told, you know, that without being, you know, a musical per se, I thought was just, they executed as well as you could expect.
Yeah. So, wrapping up this conversation, let's go ahead and go around the table. I want to start with Spence. Spence, does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles do you give it?
Yeah, this movie definitely passes. It's really good balance between what it's trying to do. It's got some decent comedy in it, and I was kind of impressed, like, walking out of the theater with it. So, I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of
5. 3.5?
Yeah.
Wow. In terms of myself, because I want to give Corey a chance to give his own type of ranking and rating. So in terms of me, it does pass, and I'm going to give it 4.5 out of 5 monocles. I love the idea of this film. I love the heart of this film, and I love the direction it went. And, honestly, I would enjoy seeing this movie again. So it was a great film. So 4.5 out of 5 for me. Corey.
Ooh. All right. So
the film, does it pass or fail, and how many bangs does it get?
Oh, okay. So definitely passes. 100% pass. Easy. But I don't know. Since you gave it a 4.5, I feel like I'm kind of pressured into giving it a 4.5.
Don't let him pressure you. Be your own person.
Okay. You're right. So I'll give it a 4.75 bangs.
There you go.
Just because I want to show that I liked it more than him. but it wasn't perfect.
Okay, letting him pressure you into a number.
Well, I mean, I don't know your listeners, so they got to have some frame of reference. I'm assuming, you know, they know Eddie, you know. And so
well enough.
It wasn't a perfect movie, but it was really, really good. I think it's up there, in my opinion, with Almost Famous. Like, I just have this library of, like, music movies that, you know, some are good. Like, The Doors movie was awful.
Mm.
You know, like, I hated that movie. But there's some that are good, some that are bad. This is a really good movie, and I highly recommend it.
Well, I mean, like, up there with movies like, what's out there? Like, I'm a huge fan of Sing Street. Sing Street was a movie that came out in 2016 that I absolutely adored over La La Land.
That Thing You Do was another, that, like, pretty good one. I'd say this is better than that one.
You know, even like Straight Outta Compton. Straight Outta Compton, it's a music movie. You love the music because you remember it, you know, and it was just, it was great with the story overall.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Film Philosophers. Let us know what you think. If you checked out the film, drop us a line on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmphilosophers or on our Twitter page at twitter.com/filmphilosophy101. Let us know what you thought. Did you like the movie? Did you not like the movie? What were some of your thoughts? We'd love to hear them. also, you can check out all of our episodes at our website at filmlossifers.com. Like we said, we got over 170 episodes, and you can check out every single one of them, and we'd love for you to hear them. And if you get a chance, head over to our iTunes page, give us a like, give us a 5-star review, you know, throw some love. How about it? We want to thank Corey for being on the show. Corey, it was great having you, man.
Yeah, it was good to be back.
Where can people find you?
They can find me on Twitter, Instagram, at What's Up Pizzas, and I have a podcast as well that focuses on video games and all sorts of geek culture stuff. We just did a big episode on all the announcements coming out of San Diego Comic-Con, and we're going to be recording live this week from the California State Fair. That is Video Game Bang. We are available everywhere. You can find The Film Philosophers, Pandora included.
Yes, sir.
And you can find us on Twitch, where we record our shows live on Wednesday and Saturdays. Video Game Bang, or it's twitch.tv/video_game_bang. So people can interact and chat with us, and we usually steal their jokes.
It's true. It's really true.
Yeah.
Also, for those that are in the Sacramento area, we are planning to do a big collaboration in terms of a trivia night. So, with VGB. So, on August 12th, we will be having a big event at Oblivion Comics and Coffee. So, stick around as we introduce more of that information along the way and listen in, and we'll let you know what to expect.
That's going to be fun.
It will be fun.
Yeah.
Just to let you know, upcoming weekend releases, you got Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, I want to go see that so bad.
It's screened tonight in L.A., so I'm anxious to see the reviews.
Are you guys going
to
see it early?
No, it debuts this Friday.
Tarantino, so. Man, what you doing? You're slack. I know he listens.
Oh, he better listen. Yeah. So, but like I said, that wraps it up. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Am I supposed to say something?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, get out of my house.
Well, there you go. Class dismissed.